Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Madeline Clark. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria. In a spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Wasanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather today, Sunday, January 27, 2019. We offer a special welcome to our visitors, newcomers, and those who are back after a long absence. Today's service is a pulpit swap between the two Unitarian Universalist congregations here in Victoria. Last Sunday, our Reverend Shauna was in the Capital Congregation pulpit, and this Sunday we have Dick Jackson and Kathy Baker joining us here at First Unitarian. In addition to a newcomer welcome ceremony, today's service also features numerous gifts from Pat Wichter, a touring folk, blues, gospel, jazz singer-songwriter from New York, who will be appearing as a guest artist with the Gettin' Higher Choir at a Power of Hope benefit concert. A few logistics before we proceed to worship, especially for those who are visiting today. Please ensure that your cell phone is either turned off or set to vibrate. Do that now. Your order of service features lyrics to some of the songs we'll be singing and lists both the number of the hymn and the hymnal color. Our order of service also functions as a community bulletin board. Good reading. So including announcements about upcoming events, such as our congregational meeting today from 12 to 1:30 here in the sanctuary, soup and sandwiches available. Your order of service is also subject to change, as is the case today. So please note that that following the offertory, there will be a reflection from Kathy and Dick instead of a meditation from me. And between the anthem and homily, which is provided by Pat, not Kathy and Dick, you'll be singing the chorus of the Kerrville Campfire Song. So let's recap that. After the offertory, reflection, anthem, song, homily, song. All good. After the service, if you're interested in knowing more about our congregation, please connect with Astrid at the visitor table and join us for refreshments in the Lion Hall at the end of the hallway. There is a card at the back of the sanctuary for Ted Humphreys. Although he tires easily, visitors are welcome at the Saanich Peninsula Hospital. He's in room 1490. One final announcement is that there will be a Soul Matters group for parents and guardians in the farmhouse common room. Don't know the time, Aaron. Thank you. It's during the service, and you are welcome to leave, bring your children, and follow Aaron. Aaron. Excellent. Let us proceed to worship. Please rise as you are able and join in singing hymn number 347 from your gray hymnal. 347 from your gray hymnal. Here to see all of you. The possibilities abound when you have this much feeling and energy and gather the spirit indeed. So it's wonderful to see all of you this morning and to have all of these wonderful musicians and guests with us this morning. And I am feeling awash in possibility. As we gather for this final Sunday of exploring the theme of possibility, I'm amazed as I listen to Maddo talk about all the things going on. How many of you thought she was soon going to say the order of service can be used as a flotation device? I thought that was coming next. It was a little. But sometimes when we gather in community, we need a little bit of everything. We need a smile. We need some love. We need to be gracious with one another when we step on each other's toes. And we need to remember that the possibilities when our hearts and our minds are together are much more than they are when we stay alone, when we stay in our own space, when we actually listen to the people who tell us to stay in our lane. I keep remembering that my lane needs to expand. And so as we gather this morning, I'm going to invite our guest, Pat Wichter, who has come to be with us from one of those most diverse places of Brooklyn, New York, that sometimes you need to get out of your lane to remember that your neighborhood and your community can be much larger than you ever imagined. And sometimes music is the best tool to remind us that our hearts can expand. And so as Pat kindles the flame, let us remember that the light of possibility is always with us and that there is always a greater path. Blessed be and welcome.
Good morning, everyone. This is our story for all ages. This is called Good Luck John. It's based on the good luck, bad luck story, which comes from the Taoist tradition. John owned a horse that helped the family earn a good living. One day, the horse ran away. The neighbors all exclaimed, "Your horse ran away. What terrible luck." And John said, "Maybe, maybe not. We'll see." A few days later, the horse returned home, leading a few wild mares back to the farm as well. The neighbors shouted out, "Your horse has returned," and brought several horses with him. "What great luck!" John replied, "Maybe so, maybe not. We'll see." Later that week, John was trying to train one of the new horses, and she threw him to the ground, breaking his leg. "Oh, ow." And the neighbors cried, "Your leg is broken. What terrible luck." John said, "Maybe so, maybe not. We'll see." A few weeks later, soldiers came through town and all the able-bodied men were told they had to join the army. But they did not take John, who was still recovering from his leg injury. And his friends all shouted, "You've been spared! What tremendous luck!" To which John replied, "Maybe so, maybe not. We'll see." There are things that happen in your life that are beyond your control. Lots of them, especially if you're a young person. You don't have much say in that. But you do have a say in how you respond to things that are beyond your control. Sometimes when we don't get what we want, we think that's a bad thing. And when we get what we want, we sometimes think, most of the time, that that's really good. What the story is telling us, we can't be so sure we know what's good or what's bad luck. You don't have to get angry or upset when you don't get what you want. It doesn't mean it's quite so terrible. And maybe you shouldn't get completely super excited when you get exactly what you want. I can see not everyone's on board with that. But try it sometime, because you may surprise yourself. Okay. Thank you.
And now will you rise, and our grown-ups will form their arches on the aisles, and we'll sing our song to kids, sing the kids out. Mornings, it feels like there's a little bit of everything going on this morning, but in a good way, in a really, really good way. We're actually not doing a visitor welcome this morning, Farrell. Okay. Yeah, see?
You're all welcome just the same.
Yeah, everybody's welcome. And sometimes, like Pat was saying, well, you know, we might have one, we might not, and we'll see. We'll just see. And this morning we're not going to have one because we've got all this special music going on and we need to welcome some new friends and new members into our community. And before we do that, I always like to say a few things about why this whole thing of choosing to be a member or a friend of the congregation matters. Because a lot of times these days people are sort of saying, what's the point being a part of a spiritual community? Why bother? And I say there are two things. One is that, as I said in the opening words, we're becoming more and more an insular culture. We all kind of move about our own lives, and we forget about all these people that we need to relate to in the world. And this community is a place where we can try that out. We can realize, oh, you know, I'm on the right track, or, oh, I still got some growing to do, or, oh, there's more still to learn about being human. There's always more to learn about being human, and being a part of a spiritual community can help us to do that work. And the other reason that twice a year we have these ceremonies for our new members and friends is because we believe that ritual matters. We live in a culture, I think, that also has kind of forgotten that ritual matters. We sort of all think that everything that we do every day is just a routine, when it could actually be a ritual if we put a little more intention and attention into what we do. And when we have ritual in our lives, we realize that every moment has perhaps more importance than we usually give it. I'll say that again. When we have ritual in our lives, we remember and we realize that every moment has more importance than perhaps we normally give it. And so we are going to ritually welcome these six new members and friends among us this morning, in part because ritual matters, and so does belonging to a community. And so we're going to be delighted, or I'm delighted to welcome them. I'm delighted to point out to you that you received a new member brochure when you came in with your order of service. And that brochure cannot be used as a flotation device, but it is full of bios of these six wonderful people that we are welcoming this morning. And so if you want to learn some more about them, I invite you to take a look at those bios that we have of these six new folks. And in a little bit, you'll need the back page of that brochure because we're going to do a ritual that includes all of us. So not just the people who are coming on board, but also all of us who are welcoming them into the community. So I invited these new people. I'm going to invite them to come forward. I bet a lot of you have met some of them over the last several months. At least I hope they've met many of you, right? So I'm going to invite, some of them are in the choir, actually. So if Ernest and Annie want to come forward. Oh, they're already here. Okay. Ernest is here, but Annie's back in the choir. So please come on forward. And David and Sylvia and Alan and Gail, we're just going to kind of line up in front of the chalice table here. And I'm going to try not to knock over the music stand. So many of you have not only met Annie and David, but probably have heard David play some boogie-woogie piano and heard his fantastic southern accent. If you haven't yet, David can not only be seen here on Sunday mornings, but at Herman's, sometimes playing some gigs here and there. And I'll do some fun facts with these folks in a minute. So Annie Bowers and David Best. Returning. Deeply, deeply grateful for those of us who've known Gail Elson over the years, is returning as a friend of our community. Gail and her husband Bob were here as members when Melora and I first arrived 8.5 years ago and then left us for a bit, and now Gail is back as a friend of our community. And I almost cried when I saw you here a couple weeks ago, and it just really warms my heart that Gail Elson is back here with us. And every single winter, our community becomes a little stronger when Sylvia Crow and Alan Boyle come from Edmonton, where they are steadfast members of the Edmonton congregation. And every year, I get a little email from Brian Kiley, who's the minister there, telling me how much he's annoyed that they are with me for the next 3 or 4 months, anchoring our work with a refugee family and doing a lot of work with the social justice group that we have, the Social Responsibility Committee. So I know many of you have met, have had the lovely opportunity to meet Sylvia and Alan over the years when they're here with us every winter. And then newcomer, but already deeply engaged and involved, Ernest Cassian is, as I understand from having met and spoken with him some, he's a professional musician, a violinist and violist, so I'm going to introduce him to our daughter soon. But Ernest is also a longtime Unitarian, was very active in the Regina congregation for many, many years, moved to the island a while ago, and then has just recently moved to Victoria, and he's already here with us. Talk about a go-getter, right? So our new custom with our new members, we used to do this big, elaborate game of two truths and a lie, which was a lot of fun, but also took a lot of time, and we're going to hear Pat sing today. So I do now ask our newcomers if they have and if they want to share a fun fact about themselves, which is something, you know, you're reading their bios, but something you wouldn't normally know about them unless you asked a little bit, you know, and kind of engaged a little bit. So I have a feeling that a few of you have come up with fun facts. I know Gail said she couldn't come up with one, although I think Gail is a lot of fun, so I think you're going to have to figure out what her fun fact would be. Annie, did you come up with a fun fact?
I did.
Yeah? I'm just speaking to this. Can you hear me?
Oh, I'm Beyonce? Okay. This kind of fits with my fun fact. If you look at the bio, one of the things I mentioned in there is that I like to embroider. So what that means is I really like hoops. I like all kinds of hoops. And one of my favorite kinds of hoops would be the hula hoop. So I haven't done it for a little while. I've been getting away from it, and I want to get back to it. I have several adult-sized hula hoops gathering dust in my closet. Anybody who would like to join me for a hula hoop session, just say the word. I'll pull them out. I will.
So many of you know that Nadia, our church administrator, is a hula hooper. So the two of you are going to have to get together and do some hooping. Yeah. So David, what's your fun fact?
Well, my fun fact is that about 3 weeks ago, I took my name tag home by mistake. It was pinned to my shirt. I meant to bring it back. I set it on a table right by the door. Last week I walked right by it. Today I walked by it. Can I still be a member? And I apologize, which makes me already a good Canadian.
That's right. So have you thought of anything? No? Okay. You guys will have to find out what's fun and interesting about Gail that you don't know. All right, Sylvia, do you have a fun fact?
Well, I've traveled in over 70 countries in the world, and I've worked in 6 different countries.
Wow. Yeah. 70 different countries and worked. Wow, that's a lot. Covered the waterfront.
My first 3 years were up in the Arctic, and I lived with native people. And I find it really refreshing that people are really looking at native people and the value of them. And they're really worth value. I spent a tremendously good time with them.
You have to say you're a Bay guy.
Oh, formerly with Hudson's Bay Company.
Oh.
Western Arctic.
Wow, okay. So if you want to know a little bit more about the Arctic and the artist that we spent time with, Maureen Grubin from Tuktoyaktuk, was up in that area, yeah? Ernest. You got a fun fact?
I'm in good company with fellow Edmontonians. That's where I was born and went to university. In fact, that was my first exposure to the Unitarian Church, which my roommate at that time referred to as the heathen church. And I said, Barry, what's that all about? He made a few comments, and I was unable to go to his marriage there, but about 20 years I became a Unitarian, so the germs had been planted at that time. And the 5 years at university, at which time I learned a bit about the Unitarians, were the best years of my life, wherein I had doors open to me for the rest of my life, travels to probably 35 or 40 countries in my sabbatical leaves from university, studying for 1 year in the old Soviet Union in the 70s, and consequently many sabbaticals in Africa and throughout Europe. I'm very happy to be here.
So lots of stories to ask these people to hear a little bit more about. That was just a little taste. Well, let us join now together in this responsive reading that we have together, which acknowledges that we are changed when new people become a part of our community because they become a part of our lives. These persons of faith stand before you in formal recognition of their belonging in this religious community. New members?
I come from the secret, searching for a sense of belonging to something greater than myself, longing for a deeper connection to the sacred in life, seeking acceptance and support as I strive to become my best self. As a new member of this community, I pledge to share my stories, my gifts, my insights, and my love as we work together.
Congregation, welcome you among us. We promise to be open to your wisdom, to appreciate your gifts, and to support you in your striving. We acknowledge that with your arrival, we are changed, and we embrace that change, for your presence enriches us. All together? Together, we reaffirm our mission, strengthened in spiritual growth, supported in community, energized by diversity. We strive to transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action. Well, newcomers, we're going to have you sign the membership book after the service because we know that that can sometimes, but we want to offer you a gift right now, which are these plants. And we very purposefully welcome you with a plant, not cut flowers, because we see this as an ongoing, growing and blooming amidst and between and amongst all of us. So welcome to all of you, and we are delighted, as the responsive reading said, to have you among us. So please, thank you.
Our Unitarian Universalist principles speak to our ideals and hopes. We just read them, but of course, you'll find them in your order of service right there on the front. Every month, our congregation gives half of what we collect during a service to a different charitable organization. This month, Share the Plate and Undesignated Contributions will be split between our church's numerous ministries and the Greater Victoria Acting Together
listening campaign, a focused effort to build unity and identify concerns and priorities within the communities in which we reside. For more information, please visit www.firstunitarian.ca. Your generous offerings are received as they are given in the spirit of love, compassion, and gratitude. After the collection has been received from your roll, you are welcome to light a candle of hope and remembrance. An offering is not required to participate, and it is our custom to use this quiet time for centering and reflection.
We're so happy to be involved in this service today, to bring our friend Pat to your community, and to continue our annual tradition of the Crosstown Pulpit Swap. Last week, it was an inspiring pleasure to have Reverend Shauna bring her gift of words and music to Capital UU congregation in James Bay, where we got to do a little jazz, and even to sing some three-part bluegrass together with her. That was fun. And working with your worship service team and with Nick and the choir has been a great way to come to know one another better and to remind us of this healthy link between our sibling congregations. We're grateful to you all for being part of our family.
With this service, we've been pushing the limits of possibility and perhaps the limits of time. So we'll make this brief, but we were invited to share a little of our story. So in line with this month's theme, we'd like to share what power there is in living open to possibilities. We've been blessed with these chains of events that came through having that mindset.
I grew up in Winnipeg and somehow never crossed paths with the Unitarians there. After moving to Calgary in 1999, I was open to joining the Unitarian Church, where one Sunday an American UU singer-songwriter named Joe Jenks came to give a service. Many years later, after moving to Victoria, I was part of this church and that choir, and for some years, then after, ended up as a member and volunteer music director at Capital UU.
Meanwhile, after growing up in Vancouver, I followed many possibilities to live, work, and travel coast to coast to coast across Canada, including 5 years at an Outward Bound school in the wilderness of Northern Ontario, north of Thunder Bay, then ended up in Victoria in 2002. Eventually, I joined the Getting Higher Choir and was open to try hosting a small extra practice in my own home. That was such a fabulous experience that led to the idea of hosting more music parties, inviting many from the Getting Higher Choir, including my friend Winnie Cooper.
Right. As it happens, Winnie knew me from Capital Unitarian.
And she saw the possibility that Dick and I might just get along. So she invited Dick to my party. And I was open to the possibility of having a stranger come into my home.
And I was open to coming to a party where I only knew one person there.
And we connected brilliantly, as our perceptive friend Winnie had predicted. And eventually I found a happy home connecting with a Capital Unitarian community. And Dick and I were married in 2013.
So getting more used to this open to possibilities thing, Kathy and I contacted Joe Jenks, remember that name, who was willing to come to Victoria to be our guest and do a service for Capital, among other gigs in town that we arranged over a weekend. Now, also meanwhile, through folk music circles and by meeting at a UU conference in the U.S., Joe had connected with Pat and with another fellow, Greg Greenway, and being open to possibilities, they formed a trio that turned out to be a very successful group named Brother Sun. Joe told me about the trio's plan to come to play at the Island Music Fest in Comox, Courtney, in 2015. And again, open to possibilities, why not? We hosted them as they came through town and came to be friends with Pat and Greg as well over that weekend.
Wondering where all these musical possibilities could lead, the following year I signed up for the two-week community choir leadership training program run by Siobhan Robinsong and Dennis Donnelly, the longtime directors of the Getting Higher Choir. And the year after that, Dick did the same. This turned out to be the same time that those directors were both looking to scale back from the 3 times a week practice schedule to focus more on other projects, grandchildren, and so on. With their wise and gentle mentorship, we all came to feel that the two of us could be trusted to adopt this very big baby, the choir. Dennis continues the Monday night group practicing right here in this space as the new Wavelengths Community Choir, and we've carried on with the other two weekly groups, and we've added a third group in the West Shore. So many doors of possibility opened to us, and with a little trepidation and a little more courage, we stepped through.
So now on our own, leading the Getting Higher Choir, with a concert to plan, we decided to invite Pat as our guest artist, and he and his wife Ellen, who is here, were happy to accept the chance to come from Brooklyn, New York, over to our island on the other coast. Taking the chance to spend some 2 weeks here opened more possibilities for doing services at both of our congregations.
So, through the connections of three congregations and at least eight people along the way who were willing to say, why not, here we are today. Amazing things happen when you're willing to say yes to possibilities.
Thank you.
I seek trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day and the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, second. This next song needs a small introduction. It's called Kerrville Campfire Song. In the hill country of Texas, there's a beautiful folk festival in the town of Kerrville. And when you arrive on the campgrounds, somebody greets you with a hug and then says, welcome home. And then they ask you your name. It's a very beautiful place, full of possibilities. The festival is 21 days long. And over the course of those 21 days, people come and go. Not everyone stays that long. But the unexpected happens, and the spirit of friendship creates new, unexpected, beautiful possibilities. Thank you. with me by the old oak tree. Time's getting short, and soon we will leave. It's been a beautiful day, been a beautiful week. We've said all we've said, now we don't have to speak. And I never knew my heart could be filled with such song. I'll sing every day after we're gone. I will sing my whole life long. You're free to join us if next time the chorus comes around. Glimmer of sun behind the green hills. The campfires are quiet, the air is still. In this little corner of heaven's own ground, a lone voice is raised in the day's first sound. Heart could be filled with such song. I'll sing every day after we're gone. I will sing my whole life long. Love will go on, but our time here will end. Let's say our goodbyes, but don't shed a tear. I'll see you again next year. And I never knew my heart could be filled with such song. I'll sing every day after we're gone. I will sing my whole life long. I will sing my whole life long.
Standing on a platform now, I'm really tall. Okay. That feels better not being all the way up there, delivering my homily from an airplane, as it were. Thank you, Reverend Shauna, and thank you, all of you, for allowing me to hijack your pulpit for a little bit of time. I really do appreciate it. The title of this talk is
non-attachment for non-Buddhists, Gandhi and desireless action. I'm sure almost everyone here is a little bit familiar with some of the tenets of Buddhism. Buddhists have four noble truths. All life entails suffering, and the cause of that suffering is our attachments in life, to things, to people, to ideas. And I'm sure many of you, of course, are also familiar with Mohandas Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, in some form or another. And Gandhi came from the Hindu spiritual tradition, and the Hindus have a similar idea about non-attachment. So the inspiration for this talk is this little book here. Mohandas Gandhi edited an edition of the Bhagavad Gita, which is a Hindu sacred text, and provides a wonderful introduction and basically margin notes all throughout the text, giving his commentary on the text. It's an absolutely wonderful read. And I had tried to read the Bhagavad Gita a gazillion times and couldn't make head or tail of it until I bought this book. And then now it makes an awful lot of sense. So I highly recommend this. The Gita, says Gandhi, is one of the wellsprings of his nonviolent philosophy. And he says that the Gita's central message is embrace action and renounce its fruits. Now, how difficult can it be if it can be summed up in a six-word sentence? Renouncing the fruits of your actions, it almost sounds irresponsible, doesn't it? When I'm in the States, I say, it sounds downright un-American, doesn't it? So, I mean, after all, we should enjoy everything that we've worked so hard for, right? Shouldn't we? The idea of renouncing the fruits of your actions goes against our natural inclinations. We have to work against, I don't know, maybe millions of years of human evolution to get to this practice of non-attachment. Before I was a musician, I was a high school teacher in New York City. And I, as anybody who has been a teacher or a helping professional or a parent or we all have reminders of this in our lives, but in my life, my great lesson in non-attachment was working with teenagers every day. And one of the first things I had to lose my attachment to was the idea that I was somebody who didn't impose his will on other people. My first year of teaching, I taught in a very poorly run school, and my students basically ran roughshod over me. One of my colleagues was a veteran teacher who was far and away the most successful teacher in the school. Her name was Constance Wilson. And Constance said to me, if something is going wrong in your class, do something. It may not be the right thing, but you will only learn what the right thing is by doing something. Constance was a great Gandhian, action without attachment. Gandhi argues in this version of the Gita, Gandhi argues that our central attachment is to outcomes. We expect our actions to produce certain desired results. And then we get upset when they don't. Damn it, why don't things work out the way I want them to? Gandhi points out a particular way of getting out of this problem. And he says, the difficulty, of course, is that you could respond to that by saying, well, nothing I do produces the results I want. I'm just better off doing nothing. What Gandhi says you can do is that you can engage in action in a very focused kind of way, and nobody was more focused than Gandhi in winning the independence of India. But he says you have to engage in desireless action. And so here's a quote from how he puts it in the book. He says, the Gita says, do your allotted work, but renounce its fruit. Be detached and work. Have no desire for reward and work. This is the unmistakable teaching of the Gita. He who gives up action falls. He who gives up only the reward rises. And then he goes on to say, but renunciation of the fruit in no way means indifference to the result. In regard to every action, one must know the result that is expected to follow, the means thereto, and the capacity for it. She who, being thus equipped, is without desire for the result, and yet wholly engrossed in the due fulfillment of the task before her, is said to have renounced the fruits of her action. Again, let no one consider renunciation to mean want of fruit for the renouncer. Just because you're not attached to the outcome doesn't mean there aren't outcomes. Renunciation means absence of hankering after fruit, says Gandhi. As a matter of fact, she who renounces reaps a thousandfold. So Gandhi's saying, let's throw ourselves wholeheartedly into what we're doing. Let's throw ourselves into our work, into the tasks of living, and not get overly focused on things turning out exactly how we want. When he talks about reaping a thousandfold, I think what he's talking about is the unintended outcomes of your efforts. He's saying you're entitled to choose how you spend your energies, but you're not entitled to any particular outcome of your actions. So your actions produce a whole range of outcomes, intended ones sometimes, and unintended ones. If you're totally focused on the intended ones, you're going to miss all the other stuff that's happening because of something that you did. It's a law, I believe, your will encompasses only the outcomes you intended, but your actions encompass all the other things that you put in motion, the things that you might not even be aware of. Our focus on intentions and plans is often very narrow. We only see what we're trying to accomplish, and we're blind to all the other multiple impacts of our actions. Again, being a high school teacher taught me a lot about this. I had so many children who I thought, you know, either weren't learning something or who just seemed so put upon. I was torturing them, you know. I was this mean teacher who was making their life miserable. And then I quit my teaching job in 2001 to become a full-time musician. And then Facebook became this thing, and dozens of my former students looked me up, including students who I thought absolutely hated my guts. And I have to say, I didn't love all of them the way I should have. But I would get notes from some of them saying, you know, I learned a lot in your class. And I would think to myself privately, really? But I was focused on the curriculum. And I don't think they were necessarily talking about the curriculum. They were talking about other lessons, about how to be a person in the world and how to apply yourself and how to set standards for yourself. I think that's part of what they were talking about, all the unwritten curriculum. There were all these other consequences to my actions that I hadn't considered, and these little Facebook messages out of the blue from 15 years later from people who are now in their 30s thinking about that experience helped me see that and understand that. Another example, unintended outcomes. I took up slide guitar 18 years ago. I had some idea that it would make me stand out as an artist, because there's not very many people who play the guitar flat like I do, or as I call it, playing the guitar the right way. What I didn't know is how much in demand I would become as a side musician, as a collaborator, as an accompanist. I've done dozens and dozens of recording sessions for other people. But I wouldn't have even noticed all those opportunities if I had stayed so focused on my original intent, which was that people would notice me playing my own music. And so in order to really enjoy all these other opportunities that were coming my way, I needed to acknowledge that they all involved stepping back and supporting somebody else's efforts and not being in the spotlight. And it's, as it's turned out, that's been one of the great joys of my life, is supporting other musicians in that kind of way. I'll give you just one more unintended outcome. 15 years ago, I had barely heard of Unitarian Universalists. I did not think of myself as a church person. I'm a lapsed Catholic, and I was very happy to be lapsed. I was, and so I didn't know that in the course of playing music, I would play for lots of Unitarian Universalists who would eventually invite me into their churches to do things like this. And I have to tell you, I couldn't have imagined I'd be standing right here in Victoria in front of all of you 15 years ago. So I'm grateful again. But I had to let go of my idea of myself as that, oh, I'm not a church person. I won't do that. I had to become unattached to that idea of myself. Let me just read you one other thing that Gandhi says. He says, "He who is ever brooding over result often loses nerve in the performance of his duty. He becomes impatient and then gives vent to anger and begins to do unworthy things. He jumps from action to action, never remaining faithful to any. He says goodbye to all scruples. Everything is right in his estimation and therefore resorts to means fair and foul to attain his end." I am not going to comment on the U.S. political situation. I am not going to comment on the U.S. political situation. Instead, I'm going to talk about baseball, which I believe is a very spiritually advanced game, because the two central acts in baseball, which are pitching and hitting, are both about renunciation of results. After all, a brilliant hitter fails at least two-thirds of the time. A hitter or a pitcher can be totally engrossed in the immediate task at hand, which is throwing the ball or hitting the ball, and not worry about if the game is on the line. And the very best players never worry about those things. They never feel any pressure, because all they're doing is thinking about what they have to do right now, the task in front of them. They renounce the fruits of their work. The players that do worry about outcomes lose their nerve and become the New York Mets. I'm a Met fan. I get to say that. And I married into a Mets family. So renunciation of the fruits of your work forces you to take a long-term perspective. If you're after short-term results, you don't care about the path you took to achieve those results, and you're going to have to live with some ugly, unintended consequences later on. Just look at our financial crisis, which you here in Canada perhaps didn't feel as acutely as we did in the States. If you have a long-term perspective, you're going to care about all of these things. It's the unintended consequences, basically, of short-term thinking driven by greed and fear really set things up in the States to go south in a very bad way. Gandhi views desireless action as more than a means to stave off the disappointments in life. I once heard that the happiest person is a pessimist because they're never disappointed. So, but I think non-attachment is about more than lowering your expectations. It's a basis for becoming, as Gandhi puts it, like unto God, a more selfless person, more compassionate, more able to handle the hardships of life with equanimity. He also says it's not easy. He says it's attainable only by a constant heart churn, as he puts it. It means struggling in your heart to relearn every day how to renounce attachments and renounce the fruits of your actions. I want to invite all of you, if this isn't a standard practice for you already, to try it, to try non-attachment and desireless action in your own life. It won't be easy, But I hope I've given you some ideas on where to start. Thank you. Let's sing, shall we? This is another one where the chorus comes around several times and you can join in. It's a song written by the great Dave Carter, who was a brilliant songwriter. This is called Gentle Arms of Eden. On a sleepy, endless ocean, when the world lay in a dream, there was rhythm in the splash and roll, but not a voice to sing. So the moon fell on the breakers, and the morning warmed the waves, till a single cell did jump and hum for joy, as though to say, "This is my home. This is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. And should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden." So the day shone bright and rounder, and the one turned into two, and the two into 10,000 things, and old things into new. And on some virgin beachhead, one lonesome critter crawled, and he looked about, and he shouted out in his most astonished drawl, "This is my home. This is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. And should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden." And all the sky was buzzing, and the ground was carpet green, and the wary children of the wood went dancing in between. And the people sang rejoicing when the fields were glad with grain, this song of celebration from their cities on the plain. This is my home. This is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. And should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Now there's smoke across the harbors, and there's factories on the shore, and the world is ill with greed and will and enterprise of war. But I will lay my burdens in the cradle of your grace, and the shining beaches of your love, and the seas of your embrace. This is my home. This is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. And should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden.
In the interests of time and all that follows our time together, we will not sing hymn number 146. And instead, I invite Kathy and Dick to begin extinguishing our congregational candles. Surrender to life. Accept that exactly what is happening at this very moment is precisely perfect. It may not be as we would wish, but it is the wheel's inevitable turning as it moves along the pathway of our becoming. To truly surrender, fall into the arms of the moment. Be at peace with all it brings. This surrender is where the power originates. Surrender is the road to contentment. Sat Nam, Namaste, Shalom Alechem, Blessed be, Alhamdulillah, Amen. You are encouraged to sing from your heart while looking into the eyes of people around you as you sing our farewell song. Please rise as you are able. The words are in your order of service.